Hello and welcome to Holden Village. Today is August the 9th, 1999, and in Koinonia Fireside Room this afternoon is Luther Snow's session called Where Systemic Change Comes From, Spark Breaking Out of Cycles, number 99-1. Let's listen in.
And I'm the other social change global justice person this week. Some of you were probably at the Jonathan, how do you say it, Frericks thing this morning on Hurricane Mitch, and he's doing a whole series of all different parts of the globe. And that's going to be a really nice compliment to the stuff I want to work with you on this week. I've given you a handout here. I'm going to go over that. But since we're a nice, cozy group, why don't we introduce ourselves? I'd like to know a little bit about you anyway. Could you say your name, where you're from, and then profession or something that you're really heavy into? How's that? I'm going to start with you over here. You're on the end.
Me, I'm on the end. Cutting edge.
Yeah.
I'm Vicky from West Fargo, North Dakota. And my work is basically linking North American faith communities with marginalized communities in Latin America in long-term relationships that are based on community building and moving away from the idea of projects to more sustained relationships that lead us to personal transformation and change to work for justice.
Excellent. Wonderful. I heard you were here. So glad you can help.
I'm Peter Schausman. I'm a senior pastor of one of those great faith global living churches.
I'm Lisa. You probably already know a lot about me, but I'm wife of the presenter today, and I teach English at Luther College. This is our son Axel, who really wishes we could go to the 5 o'clock dinner.
Sandy from near Seattle, Bainbridge Island, and I'm a state licensor in child care programs and I'm really interested in early human development.
Excellent.
Terry Chen, I'm a paralegal at the prosecutor's office in Seattle, and I'm here to get stimulated.
There you go.
Good luck.
My name is Amalia. I'm from Madison, Wisconsin, and I'm a reproductive health care lobbyist in the state of Wisconsin, and I was formerly a community organizer around the issue of reproductive health care.
I'm Nick, and I'm from Decorah, Iowa. I'm the archivist at Luther College, but in my previous lives, I worked at the Capillary Community Food Bank in Washington, D.C., and then in an alternative middle school in Rochester, Minnesota.
Cool. Arlen, former professor of English at Brooklyn College, now retired, used to write lots of letters to congressmen.
You still do? Yeah, I was going to say, why'd you stop?
I'm Corinne, and I'm a retired proposal writer to foundations and corporations on behalf of Luther College.
We need her for our team. Come this way, I guess.
I'm Betsy, and live in Seattle, and I'm an occupational therapist, and I direct two programs in a home health, mental health program, one for older adults, well, both for older adults, so work with really high school.
Did you say home health?
Home health care.
Great.
I'm Bill for Catholic Community Services in Seattle, and I'm directed for kind of a model program that 50% of our population are chronic substance abusers, so we use a harm reduction model to allow people to still have a home.
If you haven't introduced yourself, it's you. You go ahead, just say your name, where you're from, profession, or what you're into.
My name's Christoph, and I'm a carpenter here in Holden. So I'm a little bit to your stuff.
Huh?
In the middle of the system.
Okay.
Hi, I'm Sonny Myers, and I'm from Mankato, Minnesota, and I'm a nursing faculty member at Mankato State University.
Great.
And my husband, Bill, and pastor at Calvary Lutheran.
You guys just came straight out of earthquakes into this, right?
Earthquakes.
Aren't you in the earthquake thing? Maybe.
We have tornadoes there.
No,
earthquake. Oh, he did. He did. I've been basking.
Dedicated. Earthquake.
Yeah. I'm Deb. I'm from Crystal, Minnesota, and School Notes.
I'm Mark from Missoula, Montana, and I'm an organizer for Missoula New Party. It's a grassroots local organization.
Cool. Okay, you got a handout. This is a series on change. I'm a community economic developer by training, not a audiovisual guy.
Maybe move that chair out of the way, Luke.
Okay, good. I'm just going to go over with you for the week, and I don't know, you audio-video guys, if you want to have this part on or not, but this is the week's overview. In fact, what I've got here is 10 days, because we're scheduled to be here for 2 weeks. Would it need focusing? Does this focus? Yes?
It's good.
Is that all right? Can everybody read that? I'm going to work a lot on the board, too, y'all, so sharpen your eyes. Just the overview here, and you have it on your handout. Today is kind of an introduction to the whole concept of cycles of perpetuating the status quo and where they appear and how I came to concentrate on that and what I've learned about that, and hopefully to get you all to think about where you see those in your lives. These three sessions here, actually, we might want to write this down. This is Monday. We are skipping this one, or pushing it off until next week because of the Renaissance Festival, so we've only got 4 sessions this week. So tomorrow we're going to do asset-based community development as a kind of a model for thinking about change and how you make change. We've had Jody Kretzman, I guess, here at Holden Village in the past, one of the people who kind of invented that approach. On, I guess this is Thursday then, that's Tuesday, this is Thursday, place-based action, so we'll talk about ruralness and urbanness and suburbanness and cycles of neighborhood change and rural dynamics and suburban dynamics and how all that works together. And a kind of interesting one on Saturday, we'll do a change clinic, and we're just going to take some of the things that we've learned about breaking out of cycles here and try to apply it to one or more of your situations, whether that's workplace, family, political, community. We'll be group consultants, so it'll be the opportunity for somebody to get some consulting if they hadn't had one, or to be a consultant as they've always wanted to be one. And we could do that in a couple of groups too if it turns out there are more folks. How many people might be here next week? Well, then what you're going to miss is we're going to talk about economic development, job development, business development, and this day, church-based action. And, you know, we'll have some time to talk about it during the asset-based community development piece, if you really want to, how you can use your church as a source of spark. And then we'll have another change clinic, and we'll have an overview. Okay? Any questions about that? Good. Well, I would like to start out with a poem, and since we have a poetry specialist here this week, I wonder if my wife would do me the favor. Do you have the handout, Lisa?
I have the handout.
Yeah, it's right on the top.
Dramatic reading?
Yeah.
Dynamics. We expect the forest to hum, the predators to prey, and prey reciprocate, the light to set at night, and summer set at late. We expect the forest to stay and change and stay. We expect the fire to crack, the heat to feed the flame, and flame to feed the heat, the next branch to catch and burn complete. We expect the fire to stay and change and stay. We don't expect the spark.
Great. I'm a community economic developer. I'm born and raised in Chicago. We now live in Decorah, Iowa, so I've made a complete switch to the rural scene. And I've had the blessing, really, to work with remarkable groups of grassroots community leaders and activists in some of the poorest parts of Chicago for over 26 years. I started out as a tenant organizer in Allentown. I was 18 years old when I organized my first rent strike. And it just cemented my life and my life directions. And I went on, I got an MBA and came back and worked at an outfit called Bethel New Life, which is pretty well known in Lutheran circles. Anybody here heard of Bethel New Life? Yeah, sure. Mary Nelson, a visionary in our midst. And I had the opportunity to be the first director of economic development for this organization. It's a community development corporation that is spun off of a Lutheran church in West Garfield Park, which is a disinvested and devastated African-American community on the west side of Chicago. And boy, working for Bethel New Life changed my life, turned my thinking around. She really showed me how to think without boundaries, think backwards and sideways. And so we created some of the first housing in that community that had been built in 30 years. And when we found out that that wasn't enough, and people needed jobs to be able to afford housing, we created some of the first new industry and recycling businesses and sewing cooperatives and healthcare organizations. One of the first holistic healthcare centers in the country. Basically, if it was on the cutting edge, Bethel New Life was doing it. And I found that I would go around and I would be talking to different people in different circumstances. One week we'd be beating up on the banks about their investments or their lack of investments in the community, and they'd be bank executives. And another time I'd be at a gathering of peers and friends. And another time I'd be addressing a church group about investments in some of the limited partnership shares and some of the affordable housing deals that we would do. And over again, the very first question, and the one that seemed to be the most high in people's minds was, as they heard all this, and they couldn't maybe quite believe it, couldn't quite say, can we really make a difference? Does it really work? Does change happen? How does it happen? Can we make a difference? How can we make a difference? And you know, I didn't really quite know what to think about that. At first I thought it was funny. You know, I have to tell the story of this tenant organizing experience when I was 18. And why did we do a rent strike? Well, what happened was we had a building in our community. We lived in Hyde Park, not a slum, but a community with some of the biggest mansions in the city and some of the worst slums in the city. And so this was a building that was owned by a slumlord. You know how slumlords work? They disinvest the building. They take the rent and then they don't spend anything on the building, so they stop paying the bills and they stop fixing things up. And so sure enough, the gas was cut off. And there were old people living in the building, and one guy needed 5 hot sitz baths a day in order for him to treat himself and so forth. So it was a terrible situation, but I remember the meeting when we decided to withhold our rents, to put pressure on the landlord to take action. Boy, and everybody dragged into that meeting. It was in the middle of the afternoon, and they were all sleepy. And I thought, what's going on here? Why is everybody so tired? And I asked somebody, and they said, well, you know, they're not getting any sleep because they're worried about will they have a place to live tomorrow. And that kind of struck me. And then I said, but then what about the strength and the courage that it takes to act out against a powerful slumlord? And the answer of the people unanimously around the room, old and young and, you know, conservative and not so, and small c, was, what's the risk of not acting? So when people say, does it make a difference? My first reaction was, what choice do we have? We have to act. We can't accept the status quo. But you know, that wasn't it either. And after I thought about it longer, I realized that that's really the basic question, the overarching question of so much of what we do in our lives, and not just community economic development, but all the things that you all mentioned when you introduced yourself. Can we make a difference? Can we make change happen? And so I started to think about how does change happen? And try to get a handle on it. Can we make a difference? And started to think about what are models through which I've seen change happen, And what are examples of how change prevents, or how the status quo prevents change from happening? Got it. So I kind of go back to college here, and I came up with some different models. Jim has seen some of these before, but they kind of struck. One of the things I came up with in college, I thought a lot about politics, you know, and I thought about how do you make political change, and I came up with Snow's dynamic continuum model of social change. And I was 20 at this point. So I call this the moving log. Imagine this is a log floating down the railroad creek here. And all of us are swimming behind it, and we're pushing it. Okay? And which direction is this log going to go? Okay? On one hand, here you've got values, and think about the continuous trade-offs and values that you know about liberty and equality, or consumption and sustainability, for example. Okay? And then here we got the people who are pushing, and we got strong swimmers, and we got some not-so-strong swimmers, and some are close to the middle, and some are closer over to the edge there. So the direction that the log is going to go down this river is going to be a function of how these people are pushing on this log, right? So if more people push farther out on this end, which way will it go? Well, that way, right? If more people push over here, it'll go more that way. What if you're here and you stop swimming? Well, that way, right? So that's almost the same as if somebody swam a little harder over here, right? So I like that. I like that because it had responsibility in it. And it said something about how there's a struggle going on for our values. And there's some kind of sense of participation there. And participation even in inaction, which is so important. But you know, it's just linear. And so I didn't like that because I started to see cycles of things going on. And you know, if you remember presidential politics in the late 70s and the early 80s, man, it went from Nixon's huge landslide, right? And then Carter, and then Wango back again to Reagan, and you know, just like this. And so I thought, well, maybe there's a natural pendulum swing that goes on in politics. And so I started to think about pendulum as a model of social change. Well, that's good because it gets a sense that things go back and forth, but there's no responsibility in that. It's almost like, you know, it's going to happen because it does happen. And I couldn't buy that, not at least for political change. So then I started thinking about what I knew about Chicago politics. How many people here spend any time in Chicago? How many people here spend any time in any city where they had a democratic machine? Okay, what's a machine do? A machine is a cycle. I'm going to pull this up again. How does a machine work? Remember Mayor Daley for 25 years? Now I got a new Mayor Daley for 25 years. Same deal. Second verse, same as the first, right? So here's what you notice about the machine. So say the machine wins an election. Okay? Then what happens? Then they control what they call the spoils of government. Patronage, contracts, jobs, right? And what they do is they use those spoils then to reward supporters and punish their enemies, right? And in Chicago, and in any kind of machine, the way that worked was that everybody who worked in City Hall was a precinct worker. And on election day, City Hall's empty. And all the precinct workers are out knocking on the doors and getting people to vote who they knew were going to support their candidate, partly because they had a relationship with them. So that means they had strong organization, is a term that they use. It's another way of saying machine. And that meant they win elections, right? So it self-perpetuates. And that's why it lasts for 25 years. Now that's not much different from some third world countries where the rich and the powerful own so much of the apparatus of governments and of markets. This morning, Jonathan here did a session. I started to think about other cycles, the cycle of poverty. Jonathan was talking about Hurricane Mitch, right? And the deal wasn't just that the hurricane devastated the whole country. It did. But the deal was also that it hurt the poor the worst. Was that a coincidence? No, it wasn't. It was part of this cycle of poverty. There's more than one. But basically what happened was the poor get the fewest resources. And in the case of Honduras, Nicaragua, the resource there was land, the good land. Right? So they got the worst land. They got the land in the low-lying spots. They got the land on the steep hills, right? So then the disaster strikes, right? And then what? Well, the poor with the poorest resources are hardest hit. And then, to make it worse, pile the socioeconomic, political, military component into it, and what happened was that the people most in need, get the least, which is where we started from, the worst resources. A cycle of poverty. Another way they talk about the cycle of poverty quickly in urban and rural and suburban areas, actually, domestically, is poor people with the fewest economic opportunities are least able to afford disaster and personal family life. So healthcare problems, childcare problems, family breakups, right? And so those things happen and they tend to lose their jobs and then they tend to have fewer economic opportunities. That's kind of the domestic version of the same thing. Let me try a few more of these cycles on you that I started to see, because I was thinking about this in general and not just in terms of social change. What about in nature? Natural selection runs this way. Boy, I've had a lot of fun reading some new books about the origin of life. I'm going to talk to you about that in a sec, but let's just try the old Darwinian model, right? Like a giraffe. What was the deal with the giraffe? There's a fight for survival and reproduction out in the belt. And then some animals get taller necks, right? And so they get better food. So their offspring are healthier. And they are better able to compete in the competition for survival and reproduction. Another vicious cycle, a self-reinforcing cycle within in the world of natural selection. Okay, that's not the only place. What about families? Okay, we had somebody here who was involved in substance abuse. How about just straight alcoholism? Somebody's involved in drinking and bad behavior. Now, what they tell us is that people in the family and other close friends and colleagues and so forth get involved in these codependent behaviors, which there are more than one of. So there's aggressive codependent behaviors and there's passive and passive-aggressive codependent behaviors. And so what does that do? That creates more family and social conflict. That supports and leads to and reinforces the original drinking and bad behavior. Codependency is really all about a cycle. Okay? I'm just going to throw a bunch of these at you so you get a flavor of it. Also, we don't have a whole lot of time, but if you stay for the whole week, we get to talk about more of these things in detail. Individuals. What about overeating? Low self-esteem? Person has a tendency then to overeat, to compensate, and then they become overweight, and then they perceive their appearance negatively, and so then there's low self-esteem. I got a note, because I know there are folks here, these people have told me before, overeating can also be a genetic thing. It isn't that overweight is a result of this, but this can be a self-reinforcing dynamic of self-esteem and physical development. Let's move to the arts. you know, the arts are like this over and over again, the development of new genres. Pick a genre, you know, the blues, impressionism, whatever it is. How did it happen? Just like some hot new artist that captures the imagination of and attention of critics and audiences, or both, and it kind of powers that be. And so then other artists adapt and reflect the new rules, the new forms being developed here, and then that changes what we call conventional wisdom, which becomes boring and commonplace, and so we get a new hot new artist to break it up again, right? Genre development happens over and over like that. So I can go on and on, as you can imagine, and you should see, you know, I spend my time reading a book about economics, and I get all wrapped up in business cycles, and then I read a book about art, and I get all wrapped up in this sort of thing. Kind of fun. I'm going to show you a couple more that are kind of complex, just to give you a sense of where it can go. Here's one from The Ecology. I've read this book by Hawkins about the ecology of commerce, and he's talking about a pond when it begins to receive large runoffs of phosphate-containing detergents. Ordinarily, he says, as fish create waste and die, detritivores decompose the waste in inorganic products that feed the algae population and invertebrates, and that in turn become food for stable fish population. Positive cycle, yay. Then, when phosphates, boo, drain into a pond, the influx causes the algae to bloom faster than it can be consumed by the slower breeding fish. As the algae dies, their decomposition uses up much of the available oxygen, causing a die-off in the oxygen-deprived fish. The dead fish are more waste, creating more algae since the fish aren't consuming it, and spins like that, a negative cycle. That's a little more complex. And then I got to show you the ones that I'm just looking at right now. I got this guy named Werner Lowenstein, and I'm reading this book here called The Threshold of Life. And all he's trying to do is try to say, what was the origin of life in the world? Nothing more than that. But it's so cool because it's full of these cycles. And so he's got something that he gets so into the... I'll pull down the thing now. He's got a thing that's called the circus. And so information is the key thing in science now. Forget everything else you know. And it comes in from the cosmos. It creates order in proteins, RNA, and DNA, which spin around in increasing information flows and then eventually spin off to the cosmos. And I like this picture even better. The circus, the flowing in from the cosmos, information loops back around on themselves. And basically his theory, or the theory that he describes in this book, whoever's it is that life came from these positive feedback loops, spinning around of information transferred from RNA to DNA, from DNA to physical bodies, and so forth and so on through the ages. And it's kind of exciting to think about how all that came from, basically, in his, just to give you the answer to his book, the answer was that all that came from fluctuations in energy at the Big Bang, at the creation of the universe. She's nodding. She knows this. She's on this. She's a nurse, man. Nurses know everything. They know everything. You watch. Those nurses are on top of it. Okay, that's a good one. So I'm thinking about sparks, right? What caused these cycles of change, right? What's the mother of all sparks? The Big Bang, right? There it is, right? Except, here's Stephen Hawking's book, you know that one, what is it, The Brief History of Time or whatever like that? And what he's saying is the Big Bang And then a cycle, increasing time, the size of the universe goes to maximum size, and then it starts to crunch, till you get to the big crunch, and back again. So he's imagining even the development of the whole universe is a positive feedback loop, kind of reinforcing cycle. So there you go. Just when you thought you had it, it goes back into a cycle again. All right. So that's all a lot of fun, and you can tell I like to do that kind of stuff. I should mention the theme of the week, the Tree of Life, which is a what?
Which is a what?
Which is a what?
A cycle.
Well, let's find out later on this week. Okay.
By the way, that's what Jonathan was saying. That's why the giraffes get the long neck, is because they're eating the leaves.
From the Tree of Life? Good one, Jonathan. I like that tie in there.
You're a cyclist, too.
Uh-huh, right, right. A bicycle. Oh, I see. Just that's the name of me. Okay, good. I got a name now. I'm a cyclist.
Doesn't mean the capital.
All right. Actually, I have one more, even more complex one about grassland dynamics. I'm going to skip that in the interest of time. So what? Right? So what about all this? Why should we study that? What's all that got to do with poor people in housing in the inner city or alcoholics or third world disaster relief? Well, the first thing is that, you know, if you think that the personal is political, once you start to find examples like this, if you think of change in these terms, then it becomes universal. It's something that everybody can identify with. All of us have, in one way or another, been involved with some kind of a cycle, some sort of a self-perpetuating loop. The good old boy network at your office, the patriarch who's set in his ways, we've had these examples. And so rather than thinking, gee, it's amazing and weird what this guy's doing in West Garfield Park or this guy's doing in Kosovo, thinking about what we all do that is involved in these kind of cycles, and then when and where and how and if we have seen breaking out of cycles and where we've experienced it and where we've benefited from it or contributed to it, where we've seen sea change becomes really important. So that then we can understand change everywhere by understanding change in our own lives. And then we can learn how to replace bad cycles with good ones, how to replace racism and ignorance with culture and learning, how to replace fear and hate with faith and love, how to replace consumption and degradation with cooperation and sustainability, and then I think the biggest one of all, how to replace silence and violence with hope and action. And that's it, really, isn't it? Isn't it about hope? Is that what they're asking? Can we make change? Is there hope? And there's a cycle of hope and action. The woman today in your session was saying, the people in that village had hope because they were doing something for themselves. They were doing action that gave them hope. They had hope that let them do action. And that's us, isn't it? That's how we have to start. We have to start with hope and then get from hope to mutual support. How we can find ourselves as part of a larger effort, how what you're doing in alcoholism and substance abuse is contributing to what this nurse is doing and trying to promote good health in another community, and how all of what we're doing is contributing to a larger worldwide global effort. You know, think globally, act locally, right? So that we get vision for what change might look like. They made change. God, look at the odds they were up against, and look at the change they made, and what did it look like? How did they get to that change, and how did that happen? What was the source of the change, the spark? And then finally, the crystallization of change, the spinning of that positive cycle after the spark has happened. That's the point of all this. And what I like to do this week is to take concrete practical examples, and I'll provide examples from my own experience in urban and rural development and institutional dynamics and churches and so forth and so on. But I'm hoping that you all will come up with these examples too to make it more relevant to yourselves and to cross-fertilize what you've got. 5 points I think that we're going to come out of here with. First of all, scope. What looks unchangeable or unpredictable in one scope of vision can be viewed as a part of a larger or a smaller cycle in another. Also, we talked about the Big Bang. Earthquakes earthquake seems like, you know, a spark of any kind of spark. It's like, blam, here comes an earthquake. Unless you've got this larger vision to understand plate tectonics, in which case they see it as a part of cycles, and they're talking about bubbles of the magma and all this kind of stuff, right? Induction cycles.
Induction.
Okay. To look at the difference between positive and negative cycles, and that's not just clay. Sometimes positive cycles can become negative. Something that once was good becomes institutionalized and set in its way. The art thing was like that, but so can be social service agencies we'll talk about tomorrow. And the flip side, how to use positive cycles to give you the strength that you need to kind of break out of the negative cycles. Roles and responsibilities, sister city thing, right? There's the different roles that the powerful and the weak play, but they aren't service and dependency. They are both positive roles from where you are and where you can act and what you can do. And so there's a need then for the privileged and the disadvantaged and the powerful and the weak to cooperate for strategic change against these very powerful cycles that we're both subject to. And most of all, I want to think about the source of change and where it comes from, because that's really the bottom line, the spark. And I've thought about internal sources of change versus external sources. And I've also thought about how sometimes a spark acts on the strengths of a system, and in other cases, a spark acts on the weaknesses of a system to make that change. We'll talk more about that. In fact, I got like a little worksheet you can use to do that. The whole point then is to try to guide hope and to stir us all to action in different circumstances. I'm going to do a breakout now to get you all to talk to each other, but first let me see if there are questions. Hey, media, I'm going to do a breakout in a minute. What do you think, people? Does that sound right? Cycles in your life? Well, tell you what, don't talk to me, talk to your neighbor. And if you already know your neighbor, move around a little bit. Let's get groups of three and just split up a little bit and ask yourself this question: where have I seen a system where the status quo perpetuates itself? That's all you're asking. Where have I seen a system where the status quo perpetuates itself? In your workplace, in your family, in your individual life, in your community, in a political situation, in the ecology, in the chemistry lab, in your profession, higher tax base, to growth, like that. Yeah. I mean, to boil it right down to two. Sometimes I do three, sometimes I do four. It's a really rich one to do five or six of these points on the circle. I have to tell you, I was working with this Native American Indian coalition kind of group in Chicago, and I sat down, I had a model like this. I'm always drawing triangles and circles and stuff like that. I don't remember, it was a cultural center for development thing. So I had a triangle. The guy said, that's really interesting, but you know, you gotta get rid of that triangle thing. Well, what's up with that? No, we use squares, diamonds, really, because north, south, east, and west. Points on the compass. So you gotta get rid of that. I said, I can't work that in. Anyway, so sometimes, sometimes it's two, sometimes it's three, sometimes it's four. Let's just see how quickly we can do these. Another one, please.
Well, one of the things we talked about, because we have similar, is that we have our obvious cycle, like for reproductive health care, is pretty similar to the poverty. People can't get health care, then they have health problems, then they're back in poverty, can't get health care. But we also have like inner cycles because of abortion politics, and I don't remember your name, it works with mental illness, and so inner politics. But you can't actually even deal with the outer cycle because you're spending all your time stuck in here.
Good. Okay, let me just do this. The obvious one was you start with poor health, so you don't have a good job.
Well, so you don't have access to family planning.
Yeah, okay, so access to resources, so you have poor health. Okay, like that. Okay, all right. So now the inner one is kind of a political one.
Mm-hmm.
And what's the deal with it?
Funding issues. Kinds of restrictions, but mainly it's funding for both of us. That's the easiest one. So you're constantly battling for funding to keep your services open.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And
but
that costs money, and you know it's
okay.
All the time.
So
the way the system is organized has changed all the time. Like in King County in Seattle right now, we're fighting that. But we're in another cycle of change in our mental health system where managed care company, commercial insurance company is going to come in and contract with all the public providers. And this is just, these kind of cycles go on continually.
All the time, huh?
Never stop.
Okay, and what I wrote down here is kind of a boiled down, stupid version here. If you're chasing dollars, it costs more money to raise funds, you need more money to chase the dollars, and so, and then you get wrapped up in this. So then we have a question of scope, right? I lose, in this case, unlike the earthquake, where you're dealing with the immediate thing of the wall falling in, and instead of thinking of plate tectonics, which is global, here you're saying you get the bigger thing, which is what we really want to talk about, which is reproductive health, and you get chased inside with a smaller scope of just dealing within the beltway or within the funding cycle.
Right, and the money then gets diverted from who really needs the money.
Interesting how people view cycles. Hawkins, this guy who wants to try to talk about the ecology of commerce, what's his name, Stephen? No.
Paul.
Huh?
Paul
Hawkins.
Paul Hawkins. Right, the guy who got Stephen Hawking.
That's Hawkins, that's the other guy, the time thing. Cycles is good to him. It's like cycles is nature. What we need to do is get business to operate on cycles, right? Instead of extracting, which is linear and straight out, right, and reducing in size, then the cycle is positive, and that's about sustainability and reinforcement. So there's a way of thinking about cycles, which is only positive. Now, interestingly, I read his book with this hat on, right? And so I caught him in some places. The economy is a cycle, too. Schumpeter, I'm reading this other book about business cycles and the cycle of, you know, basically the rich get richer and the poor get poorer. The people who have the money control the resources, they control the inputs, they control the outputs, they control what's sold and how much it's sold for and so forth, so they make more money. And that's a kind of a cycle, too. It isn't strictly linear. It's linear in this context, and then it broadens the scope to think about the missing stuff, the earth resources, which aren't costed out, the social costs, the cost of the stuff that's left, and the cost of the stuff that's destroyed in the process. So it isn't just a question of cycles are good or cycles are bad, but some cycles are good and some cycles are bad. A theory, a postulate, I mean, I don't know if it's right or not, it's a work in progress. Because cycles are powerful, you got to use a positive cycle to break a negative cycle. You can't just break out of the old cycle. You can't just get rid of the bad manager. You got to get back into a new cycle where good managers are valued, right? That's a postulate. I don't know if it's true or not. We'll see. But I just think it's like this guy, Lowenstern, whatever his name was, that says circular information is so powerful it just overwhelms everything else. And if you don't have some kind of a circular thing going in your social change action, then you will be up against powerful forces in the status quo forces that are circular and that will overwhelm you. So that's kind of a theory about all that. Questions, comments? We're just about wrapping up, and I just want to say a couple words about the other classes this week. Yeah.
What just makes me think about the, you know, this morning's discussion, and that we're talking about, you know, having a good cycle and a bad cycle, and you know this Jubilee debt forgiving program. As far as you've got this cycle that's going on, where which is bad, which is that, you know, the richer are getting richer and perpetuating themselves and so on, and
people know
you're talking
about
the country.
Not everybody's here. I just want to interrupt to say, okay, the debt cycle, do it for me, John.
Well, there's a movement for the millennium to forgive the unpayable debt of the world's poorest countries. It is unpayable by any cycle. So we'll forgive it. For it, spark it out of here.
And it's a bad cycle. Exactly. Spark it out of here. That's what we want to do. The cycle is the poor countries have capital to develop. They borrow to do that. Then they have debt. The debt eats up half the government spending, the national budget. So therefore they don't have money left to develop. Right? Okay. And the Jubilee thing then.
I was going to say it's a bad cycle, but it works. You know, and it has worked forever, and it continues to work. Whereas, you know, the good cycle is when you look at the people that have survived Hurricane Mitch, who are the ones who are, you know, the folks that are injured, that have nothing, you know, that don't own their homes, that don't own their land, that don't have jobs, that don't even have water systems. But they're making it work in a positive way because they support each other, and they've got faith and belief in themselves and in their community.
Right.
So it's trying to get those two together somehow in order for
you know, to get that change to happen.
Right, right. Okay, so there's the strength of the alternative cycle, which we need to do, right? And at the same time, then you have to ask yourself, when he says the bad cycle works, he's not saying he thinks bad is, you know, he's not rooting for evil, right? What he's saying is, there's a strength to it. Now, you might think it's like koto sum brisate. It's like pride goeth before the fall. It's like the fall of Rome. Hmm? And that what it looks like strength is actually going to fall in on itself. I gave the example to this group here of the Oxbow River, which, you know, the Oxbow River flows through the field and it kind of curves around. And the strength of it is that it has a current that creates a shape. Hmm? And it kind of washes out the far side of the, what is it, of the far banks of the river and so forth. But eventually, by washing and washing, it kind of creates a kind of a loop. And eventually, the strength of the Oxbow River, the current, breaks through that loop and creates a new direction because of the strength of the cycle. Hmm? So it could be that an existing cycle is about to fall in on itself by intrinsic, these people are deterministic chaos, man. It's just unbelievable. It's not an intrinsic in the information contained in the cycle itself. Or it could be that we got to act externally. We got to intervene. And we got to organize. And we got to push our legislators. And we got to use the church and faith as a way to try to put pressure on legislators to do this Jubilee thing. Or we could say, look, we're going to make sense. This Jubilee thing is what's sensible, right? How people in the middle of this hurricane ravaged country are going to pay off this debt. You know, so then forgive this debt, start over, start fresh, like bankruptcy court, right? They do it for a good reason. It's just legal.
Mm-hmm. People get to spark themselves up.
They get to spark themselves up. Germany got to, right? In the Marshall Plan, okay? So this is what I'm going to explore. Tomorrow is about asset-based community development. When I say it's about, what I'm saying is I have things in my work that I can use as models to kind of think about these approaches to change, okay? And then we'll do this again. We'll have group process. I'll organize it a little differently from this. But we'll think through some strategies for change, ones that are directly relevant and appropriate to some of you. And for all of us in a larger sense. And then Thursday, place-based action. You know, Walmart and all that stuff would fit in there. But there's a lot of thinking about, you know, land in Honduras, land in the rural areas, land in the urban areas, but place and what land has to do with community and what community has to do with place and how we can use our place to organize for action. And then we'll do the change clinic again. I found this really invigorating. I love this stuff. So I don't know where it's at. And it's so cool that you all move into it just like that. I really love that.
What time is your session on Saturday?
I have 10:45 Tuesday and Thursday. And look, here's the schedule. Saturday. No, this is last week.
It's up on the kiosk.
Yeah, it's on the kiosk.
From
yeah, some of you have to leave on Saturday.
You probably leave on
Saturday. You can stay an extra day. Hey, thanks, people. Thank you.